This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Skate Podcast, talking Bruins hockey with WEEI Bruins writers Scott McLaughlin, Bridget Prue, and Brian DeFelice. Lace them up for some Bees talk. It's Odyssey's The Skate Pod on WEEI. Woo!
Welcome into episode 291 of the Skate Podcast. I'm Brian DeFelice, joined by Bridget Prue and Scott McLaughlin. We got a lot to get to today, including the Bruins loss to the Rangers. We have who's up, who's down for the week that was. We have to get into this absolute brutal, fictitious narrative out there surrounding David Pastrnak that was floating around in the local media market this past week. But before we get into any of that, let's start with the opening shifts, Bridget and Scott.
Actually, before we even get to that, I'm going to tease that we're planning a mailbag for early next week, probably record on Monday. So call for questions. You can send them in today, over the weekend, whenever you get a chance. Email us, skatepod@weei.com. You can tweet at us, @theskatepod, or comment on the YouTube video. We'll be looking at all three. So, we'll start there. And then I'll go to my opening shift, which is that I am officially concerned about the first power play unit because it has not been good. In fact, the second power play unit has been a lot better. And when you watch the way the second power play unit plays, it like really stands in stark contrast to what the first unit isn't doing. And specifically, the second unit has gotten pretty clean entries. And then they get the puck low and they just work it around the net. And it like doesn't have to be pretty. They're not looking for, you know, the highlight reel play. They just get it down low and start banging away, and they've scored some goals that way. Their goal Tuesday night, Thursday night. It technically was a 5-on-5 goal. It came like 3 seconds after the power play ended, but same idea. It's down low to Brezzo, and he gets his third goal in the last two games. And then you watch the first unit, and it's just when they do get set up, it's too much passing around the perimeter. They're not working it low. There isn't a shot mentality. I also think you saw that compared to like the Rangers power play, where they get a shot within 5 to 10 seconds of the opening draw. And meanwhile, the Bruins go on the power play and they're passing it around, and they're looking to get set up first before they even get a puck to the net. And I just think that's backwards. Like, that you get the puck to the net first, get everything moving, and then go from there. And some guys in particular, I've highlighted this before, but Brad Marchand and Charlie McAvoy are not enough of a scoring threat on the power play right now. I don't think they're looking to shoot enough. Brad Marchand has not scored a power play goal since January 13th. Charlie McAvoy does not have a power play point since, February 17th. So, you know, those guys are mainstays on that unit, and they can't just be deferring. Like, it can't all be about trying to set up Pastrnak. Those guys have to be scoring threats, and they haven't been. And it kind of, you know, they keep switching guys in and out in the bumper and the net front. that kind of becomes a moot point when two of your three mainstays on the unit just aren't looking to shoot enough and aren't being aggressive enough and aren't being dangerous enough when they do shoot.
Yeah, that second power play unit's looked good. I have thoughts on both. I'll go to my opening shift first, though. So we've been talking about, well, this debate has been going on for 2 years now about the goalie rotation in the playoffs and who to play and who to start. And for most of the season, or I wouldn't say most of the season, but for a good portion of the middle of the season, especially when Swayman was putting up the kind of numbers to be an all-star this year, it kind of looked like it was his net to lose going into the playoffs. And, you know, people wanted to see him start game one and try to hold on to that series. We've been on record as me and Scott, at least, as being cool with a goalie rotation. But if you're the kind of person who thought, give it to the goalie who's playing best at a lot of the season, you would have said, okay, give it to Swayman. But that's not been the case over the last several starts. Linus Ullmark has been playing great. We've touched on that the last few podcasts. He did not play in the most recent game. It was Swayman playing against the Rangers, and he had, I want to say at least two of those goals, like, you, they're easy goals to stop. Easy for me to say, I know that. But they're uncharacteristic, I guess would probably be the best way to say it, like, for him. Those are goals that he stops earlier in the year. And especially that very first one. I don't know if you guys agree on that one. The first Panarin goal just kind of squeaked through. It was bad rush defense. It's not all Swayman's fault, of course, but he's trying to slide over and puck just finds a way through a hole and it's like slowly little, like, he got a piece of it, but then it just squeaks through and it's in the back of the net. And there was a few goals that you're like, okay, he needs that one. Like when Brazo scored to tie it and then Fox comes like 40 seconds later and puts one in. It's like, okay, you need a save there in order to keep your game alive. Cause then that was really the last point where it was like, okay, we had the goal, a little bit of momentum and then it's gone. And then you never saw it come back. So, yeah. So I guess the real thing we can debate when we finish our opening shifts is it now Ullmark's net? If your playoffs start tomorrow, is it now Ullmark that you're more confident in going to in game one?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know if there'd be too many arguments right now on this panel based on the sample size since the All-Star break. For me last night, it's a simple opening shift for me. And that's the top guys not rising to the occasion against an elite team in the conference, a team that by all intents and purposes should be there at the end in the conference, along with Boston, along with Carolina, along with Florida. Like, these are the top teams heading into the postseason, right? So it's a bit of a measuring stick game, I think, despite the Bruins being ahead of them in the standings. And look, David Pastrnak, unfortunately, he's a 60 plus goal scorer in the NHL. He's one of the best playmakers and goal scorers in the world. But the problem is, I don't just know that. You guys don't just know that. Everybody knows that. And that includes oppositions in the postseason. So they're going to key on him with an iron fist, and they're going to have everybody on Pastrnak to try to limit him as possible. So if he gets negated at times in the postseason, because it's not easy to play when you have four guys draped all over you, right? You'd have to be Superman to still produce, or Connor McDavid. What are the other top guys doing around to help Pastrnak? And I thought last night was a microcosm of that, where the Rangers are playing him tough. They're not giving him a lot of space. They're keying in on him. Okay, so Pavel Zacha, Charlie Coyle, Brad Marchand, Charlie McAvoy, Hampus Lindholm, what are you guys doing to help out and help carry the load? And it was a failure on all of their parts. Nobody showed up last night, and they all got outperformed by the Rangers' top players. And the Bruins didn't lose that game because of the depth being outplayed. They lost that game because the top players didn't rise to the occasion. And that just has to be rectified if they want to have success. Like, that's the knock on this Bruins team. Like, they have David Pastrnak, they have Brad Marchand, but do they have enough elite talent, especially up front? And the Rangers do have enough elite talent, and I think last night it kind of showed. And I will say, just to say this right off the bat, that was probably the ugliest hat trick I've ever seen in hockey, because Rangers fans are probably going to boast about how Panarin scored a hat trick, and on the score sheet, it says a hat trick, and you got to give credit where credit's due. But Bridget, you mentioned the first goal was Danton Heinen with the windmill pass right to Panarin, and then it's a leaky goal on Swayman, who also was screened. The second goal, literally, Panarin passes it off an awful turnover from Lindholm, and it goes off to Brusk's elbow and in. And then the hat trick goal is the empty netter. So it wasn't pretty, but hey, Panarin has three goals in this, and the Bruins' top guys didn't really have much.
It was an ugly hat trick. I was going to say that too. That was like, you bank one in off of DeBrusk, and it's like the last 10 seconds of the period. And it was just, that one was ugly. And then anytime that you end a hat trick with an empty netter, you're like, okay, well, like, we'll give it to him, but it's, you know.
Yeah. And he, like, he could have had a better hat trick, because he actually had an absolute rocket of a shot that rang the crossbar. I think that was in the third period. But yeah, that one doesn't go, but all the ugly ones do. So back-to-back games this week where we saw kind of odd hat tricks. Now, Pastrnak definitely, you know, worked for his and earned it. But for Pastrnak gets a hat trick with none of them coming on a forehand shot. Two were backhanders and one was a deflection, which, you know, he even said it himself after the game. He's like, I never get deflections or backhanders. So, yeah, that, you know, Panarin's kind of, he's feels like he kills the Bruins pretty often when they play. And again, like, that one's ugly, but it's because he's around the net and he's in the right spots. You know, earlier this year, it felt like he was, especially I'm thinking of the game at MSG after Thanksgiving, it felt like he was seeing every passing lane and just like carving the Bruins defense up. So, you know, no, not breaking news here, but obviously if you end up meeting them down the road, like, finding a way to defend him is going to be critical. He's one of the best players in the world. He's right there with Pastrnak on points. They're both just shy of 100 now for the season. But he can do so many things offensively. And I think I was watching some of the Nesson postgame show when I got home, and they were right to highlight, like, both of those guys, Pastrnak and Panarin, the way their games have grown, where, you know, I think Pastrnak's made an effort to be more of a complete player this year, and you see him already have a career high in assists. And then Panarin, you know, who's always been a playmaker first, has really stepped it up goal scoring wise this year and already has a career high in goals. He's topped 40 for the first time. So, you know, fun to watch both of those guys this week. Obviously, Bruins ended up on the wrong end Thursday night, though.
No, and there was a lot of Rangers fans there. Like, I don't know if how much that came across on TV, but like, there was genuinely like almost, I would say, like almost 50% Rangers fans. It was kind of crazy. Usually we see the Bruins fans invade other places, but like, there was seriously a good chunk of everybody was on the same page that it's time, like, the Rangers fans were showing up. And they, for them, they saw a good game. Bruins fans weren't quite as happy with what they watched. But I mean, obviously, you could tell with the hat trick, there were plenty of hats coming on the ice, and Bruins fans weren't the ones throwing those. So,
right. Yeah. I think that as a whole, it was frustrating watching that game because the Bruins just, there was a lack of physicality. They weren't sharp. They were fumbling the puck. There was no conviction in their play. There were too many flybys. Very, very, very little physicality. And again, if you're trying to ramp up for the postseason, you have to be starting to play that way. I get it. You can't do it all 82 games, but boy, if you're going to play last night, like you against a Florida or a Carolina, you're not going to be in the postseason very, very long. And I know they can't play either of those teams until at least the second round, but I don't care who you play. If you're doing flybys and you know, notably, like, Charlie McAvoy, I love him as a player, obviously, but he's a guy that's just capable of bringing that physicality. And just, I don't know, if you're not feeling the puck on a certain night, you have to provide a spark in other ways. And I just felt like last night, nobody stepped up to, when they didn't have their A game, to try to find a spark some other way. I mean, Charlie Coyle with the goalie pulled, you're down a goal. And you just can't do the classic saucer pass to the point to get deflected. And then next thing you know, it's in the back of your net. Like, you have to protect that puck down low. And of all players, he knows that value because he does it so well. I don't know. I was just disappointed in the team's lack of spark, lack of energy. And I don't know about you guys, but it was just disappointing to see. I can't tell you why they played that way, but that's not a game that they should have been flat for.
No, they were never first to pucks, which is, you know, that you're not winning many games where you're getting beat to pucks and you're losing the battles and their entries were sloppy at times. Like, through the neutral zone, they had a hard time transitioning for a good chunk of that game. I mean, the first period they looked good, but then it started to fall off after that. Someone even asked after the game, like, was it fatigue? And he's like, there's no reason why they should be tired right now. It's not like they're in a portion of the schedule where it makes sense that they're, you know, like, they're not coming off a West Coast road trip, a back-to-back. They're, you know, they were in town. They shouldn't be feeling that fatigue. But I personally didn't think that was the reason, but it is the end of the season, I guess. I'm sure some of that could be it.
No, but their schedule's been favorite, like,
yeah,
because they've been ahead of everyone else in games played. Now they get the benefit of that, which is like they get more rest than just about everyone down the stretch. So yeah, that shouldn't be the case at all. I mean, you had 2 days off, Saturday to Tuesday between games, like, everything's spaced out. I know they have a couple back to backs, but even that, like, mm-hmm. this Florida back-to-back coming up, they got 3 days off on both sides of it. So, no, schedule definitely shouldn't be an excuse. And I don't think it is. And, you know, Montgomery said after the game, he said, they checked really well. I don't think we checked well enough. I don't think we competed hard enough on pucks. And then he was asked if that was surprising, you know, given the magnitude of the game. And he said, yes, surprising and disappointing. So yeah, it the good news for the Bruins is they're going to have plenty more games over the next couple weeks to prove that they're ready to step it up and bring in against playoff teams, because their schedule's not easy. That they now go on a weird 6-game road trip that actually, I think they actually come home twice during the road trip, quote unquote road trip, but 6 straight road games. You know, Philly, who's trying to hang on to a playoff spot. Florida, we know how good they are. Tampa, it's going to be in the playoffs. You know, Washington, desperately trying to fight their way into a playoff spot. Carolina, at the end of it, like, and then when they come home, oh, Nashville, I forgot Nashville. Like, yeah. One of the only maybe the hottest team in the NHL. And then they come home and they get Carolina and Florida again. So, you know, this was kind of the start of this stretch of playing some really good teams. And obviously they didn't rise to the occasion for game one of it. You know, we'll see where they go from here, but you want to see them obviously bring it and rise to that level for, I don't know, at least 3/4 of these games, 80%, you know, I'm not going to expect it to be every single one of them, but, it can't be one-on-one off. Like, that's not good enough heading into the playoffs.
Yeah. And that's another takeaway from this too, is I'm not damning them. Like, every regular season game is a chance to learn and improve and get ready for the postseason. So until it's the playoffs, and you can, even in the postseason, like, you can still learn game to game and adjust, but this is not the end of the season, right? It's just calling out what needs to be better. And the reality of the situation is, And I hate to go all Herb Brooks, but they don't have enough talent to not win, but without their work ethic and their physicality, like those two elements, the attention to detail, the physicality, and the defensive commitment. Without any one of those facets, this team's not going anywhere. And those three will lead to offense for them, but they aren't good enough, I don't think, up front on pure talent to just, you know, not play the way you need to play. And I think that's why bringing a guy like Pat Maroon can help as well, because he just has that. He's been a 3 cup finals and or maybe 4 cup finals And then they lost to Colorado when he was with them. So he won three, went to four straight. Like a guy like, regardless, a guy like that knows what it takes game in and game out. And he spoke extensively with Billy Jaffe and Razor on their podcast, the Morning Brew podcast, for about 35 minutes. And it just seems like the brew, like I don't think he's, when he's ready, he's going in and he's going to get a chance. And that doesn't mean that Brazo comes out. It just means that they're going to find room for Maroon to make his presence known in this room. And I think that a guy like him will probably remind his teammates every game what they need to do.
Yeah. So. I actually bumped into him yesterday on the ninth floor getting my tea. I have a routine of just going and to help keep my hands warm, but also like it's kind of a nervous habit. I always just have to have like something in my hand and kind of drink the tea. So he was also in line for the coffee tea. And so I just talked to him briefly and he's a really nice dude. Also so tall, so ridiculously tall. And he wasn't in skates when he was talking to us. Obviously he's dressed in his suit and his hat and he's just way taller than me. I don't know. He's a big guy. Nice. He was helping some kid find the bathroom. I don't know.
He
was also mildly cold. He's like, I'm mostly getting this coffee to warm my hands. I'm like, same. No, he was a nice guy. I'm excited to see him get in. He's not like what Bostonians might think of him. Like the same as like if you saw Brad Marchand on the street and you're someone who hates Brad Marchand. Like he's just a normal dude. Like he's just a guy. Yeah. Just nice.
I mean, I had no ill will towards Maroon when he was in St. Louis or Tampa, other than the fact that he was on a team that just kept beating the Bruins. But he never really did anything that was like, I mean, he would always, I mean, he's fought Char how many times in his career? It's not like he's like a weasel or doesn't own up to anything. Like, I mean, I just think Bruins fans don't like him historically because he comes out on the winning end. But it's not because of anything personally that he's done.
No, and as soon as he gets out there, they're gonna like him. Like as soon as he gets out on the ice, I think that they're, you know, things will change quickly if they haven't already. Just because he now is in the Bruins organization, but they could definitely use him. And I feel like maybe Lauko is probably the guy I would take out for him at some point. But
well, I think Lauko is probably already out.
Yeah.
But yeah, also worth noting here, Maroon started skating. He was on the ice Thursday before morning skates. So still not with the team yet, but he was out there. They'd kind of pulled the reins back in and pulled him off the ice. He had been skating before the trade. And then Bruins wound up deciding on like a different plan, pulled him off for, you know, whatever it was, a week or two. And now he's back out there. So, you know, Montgomery said there's still no timetable, but he did get all excited and, you know, pull one of his little Monty-isms where he said, Big Rig's on his way back. So,
yeah.
Is that because he doesn't know his name? His first possibly. Name is like, doesn't know his name's Pat. He's like, Big Rig. Hey, buddy, come here.
Hey, dragon. That's a big dragon. He's not wearing 19 in Boston. He's wearing 61. Or what number did he choose?
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, it was six. I think 61's right. Yeah.
Byron Bitts, those are some big shoes to fill.
By the way, I'm planning to ask him about that at some point because I think I looked it up, but I think it's the seventh or eighth different number he's worn in his career. So guy clearly has like no affinity for any one number. Just kind of rolls in. He's like, yeah, give me whatever's available.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, at this point, Beecher had 19. So,
oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. So Bridget, let's jump back to your opening shift with Swayman. It's been something that, look, it's been too long. It's not an off game. It's not an off week. It's been an off month plus for him since the All-Star break. And look, we can break down those goals against the Rangers. Didn't like any one of them. Not that he was the lone fault on all of them, but as we mentioned, Heinen makes an accidental windmill, puts the puck right to Panarin. I think Swayman's screened on that, but still leaks through him. The Fox goal you hate because it's a bad goal, but it's there's levels to goaltending, right? There's saves and there's timely saves. So you don't want to give up a goal in the first last minute of a period. You don't want to give up a goal right after scoring or give, like, there's just moments of the game where you need a save and didn't get that. But last night's kind of a microcosm. He's been struggling a bit. So yeah, I think if the playoffs were to start today, like despite me and others wanting them to have gotten rid of Allmark for something at the deadline, like he's still on this team and he's playing better. And Scott's been on record saying like he wants to start the goalie who's playing the best in the spring and go from there. But the problem is the playoffs don't start today or tomorrow. There's still another month, and there's a chance for the pendulum to swing. The seesaw could go up, and maybe Allmark starts to struggle, and Swayman goes back. And it's like, I get it. It's good to have the insurance plan there, but it just creates, like, what do you do? You know.
Well, right now we're in one of those, like, one of the rare portions of the rest of the season that we might see someone get two starts back to back. So like obviously the chance would be to go, which I don't think this is what's going to happen. I think it's going to be the second option I give you, but like you could go Swayman in Philadelphia. That would give him two starts in a row, with the New York and then Philly, which I don't think is going to happen. What I think is more likely to happen is you see Allmark start Philly and Florida back-to-back games. And then
that's what I would do.
Swayman Tampa, because that's directly the day after the Florida game. So, cause we were talking about, all right, if you want to have a guy ride a guy for a majority of a series, they have to have some prep for it mentally, as well as physically, obviously. So you'd want to start doing that a little bit down the stretch. So here's a chance we might see that. And, you know, maybe you start to have a better idea of what Montgomery and goalie Bob and management and what everybody wants to do to start the playoffs. And if we start seeing Allmark more than 50-50, it kind of gives you a really great sign of what they're probably leaning to do. And I'm with Scott. I think that I would do Allmark back-to-back games here. Give them the chance to play two solid games in a row. Right now it just feels like, okay, here's his chance to win the job, right? And then Swayman will have a chance against Tampa to counter. And then, you know, and then eventually you're going to want to see one or the other take the job. And right now, honestly, Allmark has been doing that.
Yeah. The main reason I want Allmark to get these next two is I want him to get one of the real big games, and at Florida is one of those. Swayman got the Rangers, he got both Toronto games, and, you know, look, let's be fair, he was really good in both Toronto games and got a pair of wins. And, you know, if you look ahead, like, you wonder if that's a factor. If they're playing Toronto in the first round, is there like a mental edge where Swayman just beat them twice, played really well? Does he read those shooters well? Like, or does it not matter at all? Like, is a month from now too far away for those two Toronto games to have any impact? Like, I don't know. I'm sure, you know, they look at all that stuff, but, you know, I feel like I don't know if it was intentional or if it just kind of lined up this way, but Swayman has definitely been getting some of the bigger games. And I feel like that performance Thursday against the Rangers, you know, temporarily kind of forfeits that path to me. Like, now give Allmark the bigger one. You know, give him Florida. Swayman still gets in the very next night against Tampa, so it's not like you're sitting him down for a full week or anything. But yeah, that's what I would do, because Allmark has been playing better recently. There's no question about it. And yes, if the playoffs started today, he would be my number one starter. But I'd also like to see him, you know, get in against some better competition, because, you know, Ottawa and Montreal, and I think it was Pittsburgh before that, like, that's not the best competition. That's not the highest stakes game. So let's put him in there against, in a game that is.
Yeah, and let's, you know, even the game against Philly, it's not the higher competition, but we just saw what Swayman did against Philly. Like, we just saw that same team come through, and Bruins gave up a lot of goals in that game. So does Allmark, you know, only give up two? Or because you're seeing the same team really close together, what does it look like? What is the exact difference between those two goalies? That's why I think that they should go to him for Philly too, as well, not just Florida. Which, once again, that Philly game is a 1 p.m. start, so everybody just remember to turn your TV on and don't think it's at 7. It's another one of those matinee games on the weekend, which I'm not a huge fan of. I'm not a person.
Fan of matinee games.
I hate it.
I don't have to stay up late on a Saturday night, like writing till 1 a.m. and then doing Sunday skate.
Does that mean you can go out and tear the town up on Saturday night, or you're going to bed?
For this weekend in particular, it means I can watch BU win the hockey's championship Saturday night.
They'd have to get past UMass for that. No,
here's where it gets tricky too, because this whole goaltending situation. Honestly, I can't wait until the day they don't have this, because it just causes way too much. Like, it's supposed to be their strength, but at times both goalies have struggled, and it's just at different times. And like, I feel as though you just want to oversimplify it, and kind of like what Scott has said in the past, where it's like, all right, the last week of the season, week and a half, 2 weeks, whatever goalie was playing the best, just at least what I would do is I would just ride that goalie until they don't play well in the playoffs. Like, just go with the guy who is playing well, and then until he's no longer playing well. But you kind of need to know who that guy is before the last week or two of the season, so that you can give them those non-split reps, like you're talking about, Bridget. Yeah. So it's almost like they gotta choose a guy. They gotta choose a guy like.
I don't think they're going to not this. I don't think they're going to this year. I think they're going to use both in the playoffs. I think that's where it's trending, and it might not be a strict rotation. Someone might get two or three starts in a row, but I don't think you're going to see them ride someone for all seven games in a series.
Well, you know what? Honestly, at this point, I just give up. I am so.
Well, Brian, I have bad news. We have another month to talk about it.
Yeah, and or more like during the playoffs, like, because it's just going to continue.
I know, but it's been two and a half, almost 3 years of just like of this. Like, I just, my mind's numb to it. Just do whatever you guys want. You want to rotate every other game? Go for it. You want to pick a guy? I don't care anymore. Just as long as somebody's in the net, I'm done trying to predict. I don't care. It makes no sense either way. There's too many arguments for too many different scenarios. I see all sides of it, and I'm just conceding. Congratulations. The goalie hug has defeated me. I am done.
No, you want to know what it is, Brian? If you were just on Sunday skate, it would be you and Razor on the same side, and you wouldn't feel quite as defeated, because you should hear the arguments that are had in the breaks.
but you know something? I don't even feel defeated in the sense of like I'm outnumbered with you guys, or like even in my own mind, I flip flop every five. I don't even know what to do myself anymore.
Yeah.
Like, no. There's times where I say just do what you've done, and there's times I feel like got to go with the guy, and then there's always counter arguments to why you can't. I'm just like, even myself, I'm twisting my own brain into a pretzel.
I think everybody is. I think that's why it gets talked about so much and argued about so much. And It's impossible to know what the right situation is for this exact goalie group. Like, this exact goalie group. And it also changes. It's like, okay, Swayman's maybe finishing out the year not as strong, but you draw Toronto, and it's like,
well,
do we just use him against Toronto? He's good.
And,
so, yeah.
And the argument's that they have two elite goaltenders, and that's why they should go with this strategy. And I do believe that, but there's been too many stretches this year where one or the other haven't been playing elite, and it makes you question, do they have like two elite goaltenders? But you don't know because not one of them's ever been given the net for an extended amount of time. And they rely on each other's to carry the load equally. So I don't know what to believe.
See? There's your answer.
I do want to push back on that a little, because like I do still think they have two really good borderline elite goalies. Like I feel like what's happened is, and I'm not saying necessarily with you, but certainly other people who are like, oh, they stink now, or one of them stinks now. And it's like, I think people have this idea of what happened last season was going to be like the new normal. And you guys know, like I talked about it here, I wrote about it. What they did last year was historically great, like historically awesome goaltending numbers. That just wasn't realistic. So this year it's like, they're still two of the, I don't know, six or seven best goalies in the NHL. They're just not having, you know, one of the five greatest goaltending seasons in the history of the NHL.
So here's the question though. And it's a question I don't know if any of us really have the answer to. Because, and if I gave off the impression that I don't think that they're both really good early goaltenders, and I misrepresented my own opinion, but like, do we know if they're that without each other, each carrying 50% of the workload? Like, that's kind of what I'm saying. Yeah. Like we don't know if they're those guys by themselves. And so, Bridget, to what you just said a minute ago, maybe that is my answer.
Yeah.
Maybe you do just keep going with them.
Well, and this, I don't want to sidetrack us too much, but this will be more of a story going forward, but it is going to be interesting. Like, what do you do with Swayman's next contract if he kind of loses a starting job down the stretch and Ullmark's the guy for game one again? You know, I guess ultimately it probably depends what happens in the playoffs from there, but you know, I mean, people throwing out like 8 years, $7 million, that's number one goalie money. And it's, that feels like kind of a tough commitment to make if, you know, he goes on year three of not winning the game one job down the stretch. Like, I would have at least a little bit of hesitation of throwing that kind of money at him, just to be completely honest.
It's kind of weird. Like, and we talk about how goalies are, like, a lot of their game is mental. And you see Ullmark, after not getting traded, start playing like some of the best hockey he's played in a while, because he's feeling more comfortable. And you can see like there's definitely a mental impact on like feeling safe and knowing you're here and better play from him. But you wonder if Swayman, like, it sneaks in occasionally that he hasn't gotten an extension yet to this point, when we already know that he does not want to go through the arbitration process again, and how painful that was for him last year. Like, does he necessarily feel as comfortable as he needs to play his best hockey? Obviously, everybody's a professional. They need to find a way to do that. But it's just something that, you know, when we're talking about guys that have other things going on in the back of their mind somewhere, you know, that's got to be there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so again, it's polarizing. Of course, I'm going to keep talking about the goaltending. And just, I had a moment. I just, my brain just started melting down. It just happens sometimes.
We watched it in front of us.
It just happens sometimes, you know? It just
all right. Does. Well, then let's talk about something.
The other polarizing.
I was going to say, let's talk about something that's going to calm us down, you know, much more sane takes. And that's this David Pastrnak narrative.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
No, at least we all agree on this one, right? And Brian's mind isn't fighting itself over this. This is a very straightforward opinion. And Brian, you can start, because I saw you tweet that when this was going around yesterday and the day before. Like, I saw a bunch of people responding to the take. And if Brian, if you want to like sum up what was said, and then what like your thoughts on your counter to it was.
Yeah, I mean, so basically, I'll just give the spark notes, and that's there's a 2-6 show in Boston, not Jones and Mego. So I'll leave that there. And like, listen, I've been listening to that show since I was 15, 16. I used to get, you know, I remember the 2011 playoff run. Like I leave school, I grab a chicken parm sandwich, throw on the radio, get ready for the game. Like I for a long time, I've been a listener of Sports Reader. I love it. I go ahead, Scott.
Can you guys hear the beeping behind me?
Yes.
No. So
yes, a little bit.
I'm not making this up, and there is no possible way to plan it. That is the garbage truck coming to pick up the trash. What unbelievable timing.
Yes, because it's an absolute trash narrative and a trash take. But I preface all that by saying, like, I'm not just being a hater to be a hater. Like, I've followed all the radio programs in Boston since I was younger. Like, I get that it's entertainment. I do.
You worked at both stations.
That's actually true. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah, so they're trying to talk about how David Pastrnak basically is despite being the best goal scorer in Bruins franchise history, certainly on pace to obliterate that record, and being one of the best goal scorers in the world, and that they don't like him. And they literally said that he doesn't perform in the playoffs and he doesn't help players around him get any better. And I'll just quickly say, because it made me literally lose brain cells. Multiple brain cells fell all over 93. They're still plowing them up like it's snow salt. And like, he not only is the greatest goal scorer in Bruins history, will be one day, he has more career assists than he has goals in both the regular season and the playoffs. So he helps players around him. And he's also well over a point per game player in his career in both the regular season and the playoffs. So I'll just throw it to you guys, because I'm trying not to get too worked up, because that's literally what their shtick is. But because he doesn't hit like Cam Neely or play defense like Patrice Bergeron, he all of a sudden doesn't score in the playoffs or help those around him. And there's literally statistics that are so far beyond the opposite of what they're saying. It's like I said, brain cells are all over 93.
Yeah, he's over a point per game in the playoffs. He's among active players, I think he's sixth in career points per game in the playoffs. It's crazy. Like, I mean, just look at last year, game six and game seven. If that's he got off to a slow start in the playoffs last year, no doubt about it. He was too quiet early in that series. The last three games, he was probably the Bruins' best player. He was one of, you know, only a few guys who actually did show up. Game six and seven, he scores a go-ahead goal in the third period in both games. If his, you know, if the team around him doesn't blow the lead both games, he's a hero in either one of those. Like, he would have had the game-winning series-clinching goal for them. So it's like that's wild, you know, to try to go back to that series and suggest that he didn't perform, or that he doesn't perform in the playoffs in general when he's over a point per game. And the whole, like, doesn't make guys better is an especially wild take this season, when he already has a career high in assists and has been tasked with carrying the load offensively, you know, far more than he ever has had to in the past. Like, I know last year there was a big gap between him and Marchand, who was second in points, and that gap's there again. But last year there was that gap, but then there was a lot of good players in that next tier. And not to, you know, I don't want to like diminish this year's roster too much, because there are still good players, but clearly it's, you know, a much more top heavy offense. It's not as deep of a team. And, you know, he's got points on, I think it's 45% of their goals this season. Like, you know, he's been on line with Pavel Zacha and Danton Heinen, who are two good players, but like, come on, like, what are we talking? Like, that's not, look at the other leading scorers in the NHL and the guys that they're playing with. Like, I'm sorry, with all due respect to those guys, they're not playing with Pavel Zacha and Danton Heinen.
That's your first line, essentially. Is Danton Heinen on a first line anywhere else if he's not with David Pastrnak? No, like but Pastrnak has made Pavel Zacha better since he got here. Like, that is a very specific person you can look at and go, oh, he doesn't make anyone better. Pavel Zacha would not be putting up the numbers that he does, playing the way that he does without David Pastrnak being a weapon that he can dish to. And also David Pastrnak being such a good passer that anyone on that line, they're going to handle the puck and be able to finish because Pastrnak found them. And you can think of a few different examples. At one point in the season, Morgan Geekie was playing with Pastrnak, and all of a sudden those two randomly had chemistry, and like Morgan Geekie was just banking shots in that you know, on great passes by Pasta. And I mean, throughout the years, David Krejci obviously benefited from playing with Pasta, especially last season. It's crazy. And that's why you feel like you're arguing with yourself, because you're like, I don't even know who I'm yelling this at right now because they're not here. But really they're doing what they wanted to, right? Because like Pastrnak has a hat trick, and then the take is, oh, but he's, you know, don't, this doesn't mean anything in the playoffs, he's gonna go quiet. And I think the narrative that slowly has been building I don't think our station does this, but with this specific show, is that like Pastrnak is a selfish player, which is also not true. And I think that this kind of comes out of that, like Pastrnak, he disappears in the playoffs because, like, I don't know if it's just a weird person. Like, they've been able to convince themselves that David Pastrnak has a different personality and style of play than he actually does, right? Like, being around David Pastrnak, he's not a selfish person. He's a fun person. Everyone likes to be around. He's very well liked. He's definitely works just as hard as everyone else. He's not like the superstar diva that sometimes people try to give him a little bit of that impression. He's absolutely not that. He's very calm. He's very chill. He is not like needy or any, I don't know. He's just a chill guy. It seems like part of trying to like build him into a personality that's just not who he is why you hear that some of this stuff sometimes.
Yeah. And like I said, obviously I understand that there's a game that they're trying to play. But this one in particular struck me as like, they actually thought that they were right. Like they thought that they weren't just, they were trying to tell me that the sky is green when it's blue. Like I understand that he has his shortcomings in certain areas as a player, but it's just to look back at the Bruins playoff exits with David Pastrnak, like go back to his first postseason. They lose to the Senators in six games, I think. And Pastrnak, I think, had four or five goals like in his first postseason. The years to come, he was, again, his playoff career speaks for itself. He's over a point per game. The only thing that people talk about is, we'll look back at the St. Louis series and how he went quiet. And look, yeah, he didn't have a great finals in 2019 against St. Louis, but again, you're to blame him, especially for like the whole team sucked in those showed half that series against St. Louis, but to blame him for like the loss of the Panthers, it's like he was the only player after like game two that resembled any part of the regular season version of themselves that year. The whole team sucked in that. Like, to blame Pastrnak, who had a hat trick in game six, go ahead goals in game six and seven, it's like to blame him of anybody on the team. Let's not talk about the coach, let's talk about the goaltending or anybody else that no showed, but let's talk about the guy who actually did. It's insane. But I guess that's all I have to say about that. We can kind of move on. It's just, I can't stand like the disingenuous like takes, because you know, the people that are saying that are, you know, fumbling through their sports hub headlines, trying to see what the sponsor is and not even paying attention to the conversation. And the other guys, you know, writing his Patriots beat for the combine coming up. Like, they don't even know what they're talking about, but in any event, before I get too mean.
Yeah. Just my last take. So just to back up what I was saying earlier about line mates, Nathan MacKinnon has had Mikko Rantanen on his wing pretty much all year. Mikko Rantanen also in the 90s in points. Nikita Kucherov has been on the line with Braden Point and Steven Stamkos pretty much all year. Connor McDavid has had Zach Hyman all year and Leon Draisaitl for large chunks of the season on his line. Auston Matthews has had, at least one of Mitch Marner or William Nylander on his line all year. you know, of the top scorers, the one comparable is the guy I mentioned at the start, Artemi Panarin, who's been with the likes of Vinny Trocheck and Alexi Lafreniere, which again, like, good players, but not superstars. So, yeah, anyways, that's it. That's
Pastrnak's literally playing with a walk-on. Like, no disrespect to Danton Heinen, but Pastrnak is playing with a guy that almost didn't play in the NHL at all this year. And they look good together. It's just nuts.
Yeah. It's just one of those things, like, you know what? Enjoy watching the Bruins in 12 years when he's gone and there's not a player like him. Like, it's like you're literally criticizing the greatest goal scorer that will go down in the franchise's history until somebody surpasses him at some point. Because he turns the puck over, because the puck's on a stick the entire game, because he's the best player. Like, the Bruins would be, they would not even sniff the playoffs if it wasn't for Pastrnak. Not even close. Yeah. It's insane. Yeah, let's talk about him though. Let's shit on him.
Is that kind of take that makes you feel like you might be living in Toronto? I'm like, do we live in Toronto? Last I checked, I didn't. Like, where you criticize the best player by saying that they're never gonna, like, just by purely trauma being like, well, they're gonna kill our playoff hopes again at some point. Like, they're not gonna do what they need to in the playoffs. Like, just nuts.
It just annoys me because it's like, it's not even like me being like a Bruins homer here. It's like, he's literally the best, to be the best person in the world at what you do isn't, can we talk about how insane, like, he's literally the best hockey goal scorer in the world outside of, I mean, right alongside, I mean, the last 5 years, his goal score numbers are right there with Matthews and maybe Dry. Like, he's literally one of the best people in the world at what he does. And we're going to, like, act like it's not, what he's doing is not incredible. It's so annoying.
And act like the effort, like, goes away and it doesn't. So,
and he's not just a goal scorer or an assist maker. Like he does get engaged physically. He's not, Scott, maybe not that you have these in front of you, and I'm sorry to make you seem like the type of person that would have this in front of you right away, but I also feel like his defensive analytics might not be as bad as people say. Maybe they are, I don't know, but like
they're like break even to slightly negative, but nothing. It's nothing that even comes remotely close to offsetting what he gives you offensively.
Exactly. So,
That, by the way, I was just looking at giveaways because everyone always likes to cite that. Pastrnak's number two this season. Number one is Nikita Kucherov, MVP candidate. Leon Draisaitl's four. Nathan MacKinnon's five. He's going to win the MVP. Connor McDavid's
They all
nine.
Have the puck, like, on their stick a lot. Yeah, that's why they have the most giveaways.
Right. It's all the best plays in the world because they're the ones who always have the puck.
Exactly. So, anyway, we can move on from that one. We got to get to quickly some ups and downs. I think we probably mentioned them naturally throughout this episode already, but why don't I throw it to you guys real quick?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, one that we only touched on a little bit, but Justin Brazeau and really the fourth line in general continues to be an up. Brazeau, three goals the last two games, two of them on the power play, one right after power play expired, so... he's certainly shown that he can bring that. I also think his 5-on-5 play has been good. My opening shift was about the top power play unit struggling. I wonder if you put Brazeau net front on that unit. It, again, like, the bigger problem to me is, you know, Marchand and McAvoy need to be more aggressive, but, you know, it might not hurt. Like, while you're already in the mood to try to change that net front spot on that unit quite a bit, like, might as well try it. Think Boqvist continues to play well. Beecher, a little quieter game Thursday, but
he
been playing well.
Kind of got rotated
out
in the third. They were putting Brazeau out there on multiple different looks, and Boqvist too, but Beecher and Lauko didn't end up rotating in for a good chunk of that third.
Yeah.
But Brazeau is the most obvious up, right? Like, the guy feels someone nipping at his heels when they add Pat Maroon and he just goes off. Like, he just plays well and does exactly what they've been looking for someone to do the whole year with the net front role, with, like, being a strong power forward, doing, like, a fourth liner that now all of a sudden is your, like, your biggest power play threat? Like, where did that come from? And he looked good on the second power play unit again. I loved that. This is, you know, maybe love is too big of a word, but like, I like the idea of Frederick on that unit too. And we saw it, the potential for that to work, because those are both guys that they win puck battles goal, like near the goal line, and just keep throwing shots on goal. And it kept coming out and coming out. And eventually, after Brazo gets a few shots, after Frederick gets a few shots, DeBrusque puts in a goal right after the power play expires. But that was all due to the work that was done by that second power play unit. And I liked Frederick on that unit too. He's not someone who gets a lot of power play time, but the identity of a second power play unit that has Brazo and Frederick on it is a completely different identity than you've seen from the power play this year, any of their power play units this year, because those are guys that are grittier. Those are guys that are battling. And I liked it when in the short sample size, because we've really only seen it for the one game against the Rangers, because Frederick tends to not factor in on the power play, but I think that could be a good option for them, especially considering we're talking about a top unit that's gone quiet, what you can get out of your second unit. And maybe you do try Brazo net front, and hopefully Van Riemsdyk comes back and he factors back in on the first power play unit. That might be something that helps them, but he's still out with dealing with the effects of an illness. So he hasn't been available for that unit right now. Brian, did you have any thoughts on the fourth line? Or
sorry, first, I just to correct myself, because I misspoke and said, I think I said Brazo scored like right after the power play. You're right. Obviously, that was DeBrusque.
Yeah.
But Brazo got an assist on that and helped set it up.
Yeah, because it was all of those rebounds. Brazo scored with out there with Marchand. But a similar looking goal, like goal line, like it. Tapping,
he was like literally like almost standing in the goal.
Yep, that's where he scores from. So
yeah, my only take on the fourth line is like what happens when Maroon comes back, and I just the biggest thing I care about is, and I know it's a lack of foot speed, and but maybe they're not even on the same line, maybe Brazo ends up playing a third line role at some point, I don't know, or somebody, maybe Boquist, I don't know. But I don't necessarily think it's necessarily going to be Maroon or Brazo. I think they're going to try to find a way to incorporate both. That's just my gut instinct. I don't know exactly the combinations, but as it pertains to the fourth line, because they're playing great, you don't want to mess with that. But again, like I said, they're going to give Maroon a chance, and I just don't think it has to come at the expense of Brazo.
No, it's probably Lauko and Beecher that would be the ones that would be at the expense of, would be what it looks like right now.
And I think both Brazo and Maroon offer more than just size. Like we talked about with Maroon, he has that championship pedigree and he has that experience and that swagger to him. Also, is, you know, when he's healthy, which we need to see, but he's capable of producing at the NHL level in a bottom six capacity, certainly a bottom four, bottom three capacity. And then Brazo has been showing what you guys just mentioned. Like he's not just a big body out there. Like he's capable of helping out and being a potentially a power play guy. Net front, like you guys said.
Yeah, and that's two guys that the Bruins have added to their roster since, you know, we've had all these conversations about needing bigger bodies, needing players that are willing to take the puck to the front of the net and all of that. Like those are two guys now that you have that hopefully solve that in the playoffs. So there's some fix there to come. Obviously still TBD on how much Maroon will factor in just health-wise, because that's still unknown to us, because we're not really privy to that information too much. But other ups,
DeBrusque has 11 points in his last nine.
DeBrusque absolutely has been up. I know, a very unfortunate bounce off of him and into the back of the net on the second Panarin goal. But he's trying to stop that pass.
So it's actually 12 points in his last nine.
Yeah,
that's my bad.
Minus one on that one, but he accidentally knocked that one in. But, you know, obviously he's trying to make the diving effort. He's trying to do everything to go out all out. And it's just one of those unfortunate ones that rolls the wrong way for you when you're trying to do the right thing. And it wasn't his fault that the turnover by Lindholm is what caused that whole play. And Lindholm is a down for me. Specifically against New York, I thought he'd been playing better before that. But DeBrusque's an up, and ever since the trade deadline, like we mentioned, like him and Ullmark, you see a meant like this relief and this little bit of extra confidence that both of them have been playing with now feeling safe.
Yeah. Another down would be McAvoy. I think, Scott, you mentioned that he's been certainly against the Rangers and on the power play hasn't been great. I don't know if there's other areas of his game that need to improve, but you know, I also just, I guess on the fly, I just kind of, I didn't love the defense last night in general. Like it was, just no conviction. You talked about the Lindholm turnover, Bridget, but I just, am I crazy for just wanting like Wotherspoon and Peak on that third D pair and Laura with McAvoy? Like I'm kind of like Shattenkirk and Grizzlick. Like I like them both. And I just don't think, I wouldn't hate to see them come into a game for somebody, but if the playoffs were to start tomorrow, if we're going to play that game with Olmark over Swayman, I'd like to see Peak and Wotherspoon on a third D pair. And I'd like to, like I said, last in episodes past, give Laura that chance. The Grizzlick and Shattenkirk just, I don't know. I feel like there's players that have been doing more than they have recently, but maybe that's just my one opinion.
I mean, so I'll start on McAvoy. Even power play aside, he has 0 points in the last 9 games. So, you know, I know it's not his primary job, but you do count on Charlie McAvoy for offense and hasn't been there recently. I continue to think Grizzlick's played pretty well for the most part. And honestly, in the few games recently has been the better player on that pairing with McAvoy. Yeah.
But that's not what you want though. you want to bring the best out of McAvoy. Not.
No, I mean, yeah, but I guess what I'm saying is like, to me, it's, if I look at that top pairing and say you're not getting enough right now, to me, that's because McAvoy's not playing well enough. Like, I don't think he's getting like held back by Grizzlick, I guess is what I'm getting at.
No, I think the opposite. I think that Grizzlick frees him up to be more offensive when Grizzlick is playing well, rather than having to kind of cover for Laura a little bit, who, just not saying Laura needs it all the time, but there are moments when he, you know, he's still a rookie and he might need, and just mentally you kind of come into a game playing differently next to Laura than Grizzlick, who you've played with for a long time. You know what he's going to do. And you know, anyway, I think that you'd think he'd be able to activate more with Grizzlick next to him. Laura hasn't played in a few games either. So him and Wotherspoon were both out the last 2 games. Laura's last game was in Montreal. So I wonder if we see him come in Philly, or if they stick with Shattenkirk Peak, does Wotherspoon get back in? Does Laura get back in?
I would rotate Laura and Wotherspoon both in and rotate out the Shattenkirk Peak pairing, which I know was really good the game before, but I thought, you know, a little rougher game Thursday for both of them. So like that would make sense to me. And then you've kind of seen everyone fresh and you can decide, you know, what you think is your best lineup going down to Florida. And I see what you think is your best six against the Panthers. Like I really want them to treat that like a showcase game, which is why I want Allmark to get it, 'cause he's playing better recently. I want, you know, whoever you think are your six best defensemen, I want them in that game. You know, whatever you think's your best fourth line. If, in my mind, you know, assuming Van Riemsdyk's ready to go by then, it means Lauko rotating out. But like, yeah, I would kind of try to build that one, and getting Laura and Wotherspoon back in before then gives them a chance to kind of show where they're at right now.
Yeah, but I kind of don't like the idea of them going in as a pairing though. Like, I feel like I like the Peak Wotherspoon look. I think they play well off each other. Like to put Wotherspoon in the lineup without Peak and vice versa, it's like, all right, cool. They're getting reps, but not together. And I think that pairing has potential to be like a really pesky shutdown third D pair against other teams like lower lines.
Yeah,
it's hard to take Grizzlick out, right? Like after he's been playing well. That's the only thing.
Yeah, I also think you've seen Wotherspoon Peak for a couple games, and I think there's still time to go back to that if that ends up being what you like the most. And it's not like those two in particular shouldn't need a ton of time to like find their game with each other, because they both play such a simple game. You know, when they're playing well, their game is very simple. So that, in theory at least, like you should be able to pick that back up pretty quickly versus, you know, if Laura is going to be in on the third pairing, like whoever he's playing with, that's a little bit different to adjust to because he's going to go offensively more. There are still some of the defensive issues that you might have to cover for. So, yeah.
Yeah, like I said last week, I don't like Laura in a third pair role. I don't think it's going to – he's not going to be playing with the talent that he needs to play with to excel, and it's just not the role he should be in. So it's – but I might be on an island with that one, you know?
I just think, like, you have to take advantage of opportunities wherever they are. And if – you know, at some point I would have liked to have seen maybe a couple games of him with McAvoy – give that a little bit more of a chance, but they just haven't. Like, I feel like it feels to me, and maybe there's still time for it to switch, but it feels like there were two paths. Whereas, like, either they had to try to get Grizzlick right and keep him with McAvoy, or you had to put Lori there and say, we're going to give this a shot. And I sort of feel like we already passed the point where they picked Grizzlick and he has started playing a little better, and it just kind of seems like they're committed to that. Like, I don't even know that that's necessarily the right thing to do, but if realistically, like, you can't get both of them ready for that spot. Like, you got to kind of pick one.
If that's what they've chosen, I just disagree with it. And like, what do I know? I'm not an NHL coach, but I think that McAvoy would be better off not feeling so comfortable because he hasn't been playing great and he's been alongside Grizzlick, and you can say what you want, but like, I'd rather go with the upside of Lori for a defense core that doesn't score a lot anyway. And if the side effect of that is McAvoy needs to play on his toes because he is playing with the rookie and he needs to step up his game as opposed to feeling comfortable with old buddy Matt, who has been his deep partner for off and on for 6 years plus college. Like, I don't think it's the worst thing to have him play on his toes and also incorporate the upside of Lori. Look, I don't think it's a make or break. It's just, I don't know. That's just how I feel about it. And I could be wrong, but that's my opinion. So anyway, any final takes before we wrap this up, guys?
I don't think so. I think I'm just good.
A reminder.
Yeah. Yes. Plug the mailbag one more time. So we'll be recording sometime Monday, probably early in the day. So if you have any questions, send them to us by the end of the weekend. Skatepod@wei.com email, at the Skatepod on Twitter/X, or leave a comment on YouTube.
Or ask your question a little bit early. Call Sunday Skate 617-779-7937.
Sure. You can also do that.
But yeah, you'll get the shout out on here though.
Yeah, no. Brian, you still haven't called in yet, so that's the number in case you need it.
Also still waiting for Foria to call in.
Yeah, I don't know if he knows the call-in number, even though...
0% chance.
There's also 0% chance he knows what
time he's on. Although he did call into the Greg Hill show the other day. It might have even been Friday, but...
He has no idea what time our show's on. But I was told he's awake for that. So, like, he's not someone that isn't a late riser on the weekends. I guess he wakes up at 6 a.m. anyway. Yeah. But, he hasn't. Him and Razor have a feud, like a mini feud. It's like obviously a joke, but they like to go at each other occasionally as former players. But yeah, Brian, you still get a call in. Anyone can call in. The texts are always pretty terrible, honestly. We read some of them off. The non-terrible ones, but a lot of them are pretty bad.
Oh boy. Well, you also tell me what those are afterwards. But yeah, so we have a mailbag next week, and then Bridget and Scott Sunday Skate, obviously on Sunday 9 to 11, and then Scott's heading down to the Sunrise State. Scott's gonna be a zinc guy. He's not gonna be a sunscreen guy. Gotta get him some zinc. You know.
Yep.
Can't have him burning up.
How about an umbrella? Can we get him an umbrella?
That's a great idea.
Send him a bucket hat, Bridget. Yeah. Send him a bucket hat.
Yep. A skate pod bucket hat. I should have made one.
A Scott's Pops bucket hat.
Yes.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you on Monday.